Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. Before we get started, I want to make sure you guys are aware that we are hiring. If you are an agent in any of the following markets or in a vacation market that you just think might be a good fit for the short term shop, you can reach out to us at careers@theshorttermshop.com. So we are hiring in the Smokies, Myrtle Beach, Hilton Head, and the Poconos. And again, if you're not on that list, but think you should be, reach out to us, careers@theshorttermshop.com. I believe that is it. Oh, don't forget about our new mentorship program. You can find that at stsplus.com. So it's a year-long mentorship. You get all kinds of cool stuff, one-on-ones, help with your pricing, which I think is most people's biggest problem with their listings is learning how to price correctly in revenue management. So definitely hit that up. Anyway, that's enough of that. Without further ado, welcome to the Short Term Show. Today, we're going to talk about, so Vrbo put out a new policy on what you have to do when you are listing your vacation rental for sale that is listed for rent on Vrbo. So before we do that, I've got a few short-term shop agents who have a lot of experience with helping people list their property and navigating through the process of having an active vacation rental that's listed for sale. So we'll start off with Natalie Walltower. Natalie, you want to introduce yourself real quick, give a quick background?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name's Natalie. I am an agent in the Smokies. I started as an investor with Avery and quickly came on as an agent, and life-changing. I hope if you're a new client, it changes your life too.
All right then. Next we have Jay Lawrence, or otherwise known as Jay the Viking. Jay, you want to introduce yourself really fast?
Hey, Jay the Viking here. I'm the Western North Carolina agent. I got my start with Short Term Shop because I met Julie, and Julie mm-hmm. introduced me to everybody here. But, you know, I own out here in Western North Carolina mountains, and it's awesome out here.
Jay is a true mountain man. He is out there foraging for ginseng and doing all the things. So you got it right there. That is not.
I need to get some more ginseng.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, if you want somebody to take you axe throwing, definitely go shop with Jay in Western North Carolina. And last but not least, Stacy in my favorite market that I'm still working on buying in. Stacy Lancaster, want to introduce yourself real fast.
So yes, basically what Natalie said, I was an investor with the Short Term Shop first, and it was life-changing. And so I ended up becoming an agent on the team, and I cover the Texas Hill Country.
All right. So guys, we got a lot of experienced agents and investors here. And I just wanted to bring this to everybody's attention because Vrbo, I believe, just came out with this recently. It is a new policy for when you are listing your vacation rental for sale. And I don't know how they can really police this. I know most people don't get the majority of their bookings on Vrbo, but here's what it says. So when you list your vacation rental property for sale, to reduce cancellations, ensure to block your calendar and notify travelers with upcoming reservations. So that wouldn't have been a big deal 2 years ago when properties were selling within 30 days. But nowadays, when it can take 6 months plus to get a property sold, that's a big deal to have to block your calendar for until the property is sold. Then next it says, if you must cancel a booking due to the listing or sale of the property, fully refund travelers for any upcoming bookings or unused nights of an ongoing stay without undue or unreasonable delays. Okay, that makes sense. That's totally reasonable. If you've already listed your property for sale, you cannot accept new bookings unless the following exceptions apply. One, the property will continue to be listed on Vrbo and you're in compliance with the listing authority policy. I'm not entirely sure what that means. To minimize risk of disruption, you have notified all future travelers that the property is for sale and you have blocked the calendar for all future dates close to or after the closing date. I mean, that makes sense to block them after the closing date, right? Or three, this one is where it gets a little bit hairy and kind of silly. Well, I mean, it's already gotten silly, but a different kind of silly. You have contractually required the new owner to honor all reservations after the closing date. In such cases, the new owner must follow these guidelines. They are allowed to relax the reservation terms, but they cannot increase the traveler burden. The traveler must be notified of changes in ownership and offered the possibility to cancel. If the traveler wishes to cancel, a full refund must be provided. Okay, makes sense. The remaining traveler payments must be paid through Vrbo. Any transfer of funds must be negotiated and handled between owners. I think that's reasonable. Vrbo doesn't want to have to be chased down by a bunch of people. So they pay the previous owner. It's the previous owner's job to get it to the new owner. Or vice versa. Payments for current reservations must be negotiated and handled between owners. If your property is no longer listed for sale, you can remove calendar blocks. Any reservations that were modified will not be reverted. Property sold does not qualify for a cancellation waiver. So while I agree that there needs to be some reasonable process for listing a property, and I think a lot of this, by the way, guys, comes from, I've seen it in every Facebook group for all of the big short-term rental markets, the Smokies, the Emerald Coast, everywhere, where guests, these are like the tourism facing Facebook groups where guests will pop on and say, oh my gosh, I'm supposed to check in tomorrow. And I've just been notified that the property I booked has been sold and now there's nothing else available because it's the high season. What do I do? I 1000% agree that that's not acceptable. And we need to figure out a way to mitigate this for guests. However, I also have a big problem with Vrbo thinking that they can be, or that they are, a party to a contract between a buyer and seller that they have nothing to do with. So what are y'all's thoughts, guys? I'd like to just kind of have an open conversation here, and then we'll kind of talk about what is usually done in these situations. Because I think their heart's in the right place here, but I think it's a little bit of an overreach in terms of what they can and can't require somebody to do with a property that they own.
Well, the last part where, you know, they're talking about having it as part of the contract that the bookings after closing would be honored. The biggest issue with that is what if someone is purchasing it and they don't plan on having it as a rental afterwards? Mm-hmm. What if they're going to have it as a vacation home, maybe their primary, something like that? You know, how could they make you, you know, legally obligated to take bookings in your home, you know? So if I could have a question for VRBO on that, that would be one of the questions.
Are you afraid of saturation? Well, join Short Term Shop Plus and let the saturated be afraid of you. Become the best in the business at stsplus.com.
Jay, I'd like to hear your take on that, because in your state, it's a state law that you're required to honor bookings for 180 days anyway. So your perspective on this might be a little bit different than the rest of us. So what do you have to say about it?
Yeah, I mean, it is a statewide rule, you know, 180 days from the day of closing, we do have to honor any bookings on the table. And, you know, as an agent, you should be upfront with your clients anyway and say, hey, this is the rule. You know, if you buy this to live in it, just know that you have to honor these bookings after closing. So it's not that rule with Vrbo is not really that part of it's not going to affect us that much, because we already do that. You know, we have to do that, and we have to honor all lease agreements too. You know, if somebody just signed a lease for a year, you know, we have to, if somebody buys that house, they have to honor the lease agreement too as well. But it sounds like it's a big pain in the butt, but it's really not. You know, I usually just connect the buyer and seller at the end of the contract, and you know, you go through and you know, you give the people, you don't have to honor it if they cancel it. So if you give the person the option to, here, you have a reservation here that it's changing ownership, do you still want to stay here? I mean, you know, sometimes they'll say yes, but then they have to go and rebook under the new listing. So it's just, I find it easier just to like connect the parties directly, because you know, there's not much I can do as far as like transferring stuff as an agent. You know, I don't have access to any like of that, and Vrbo and Airbnb wouldn't, you know, talk to us anyway. So it's really just best that you hack that out with the seller.
Yeah, 100%. It does. You do have to connect the buyer and the seller directly after closing. Usually you don't really want to do that before closing, because especially if it's been a tense deal, like negotiations on repairs got tense, sometimes we've got some hurt feelings and some wanting to stick it to the other one. So it's usually best to not do that until afterwards. But it's true, your agent can't really negotiate any of this for you because they don't have access to your Airbnb inner workings, your Vrbo inner workings to be able to do that. And honestly, that's outside our scope. We know how to sell houses. We don't negotiate Airbnb and Vrbo stuff, especially when we don't have access to it. But so Jay, how is it handled then if somebody's buying a property that's been a vacation rental and they want to just keep it as a vacation home and not, they're not renting it out? Are they just stuck having to let people come in their house for the first few months?
Yep, until all of those rental agreements are honored. They don't have to take any new bookings, but you know, if you buy a house in May and somebody has a booking on the on there for like, you know, August, then yeah, you gotta give that person the option. And the other thing is when you do transfer those bookings, you might want to charge more per night, but you can't. You can only charge what they booked at when the previous owner owned it as well. So you can't hike the rates either. You got to honor whatever the book their trip at. So, and I usually connect them after the end of due diligence, because, you know, that's kind of, we know that the property is probably going to close and all of the requests and stuff have been handled. But, you know, it's also a feel of the room too. Like if it's been a bad closing, you know, we might explore other things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just kind of a slippery slope. And I do agree you shouldn't be hiking the rates on people who have budgeted for a certain amount. But by the same token, an investor, maybe a new investor who's coming in buying something, it's been on one of those big property managers that don't care about optimizing price per night. They just care about high volume of bookings across all of their properties at low prices. You know, somebody who's coming in and needs optimized pricing to make their numbers work, they're kind of stuck eating it if this previous manager has done a bad job and not been using proper revenue management techniques. Maybe they're renting it for $100 a night. It should have been $1,000 a night. So new investors are kind of stuck. And I kind of feel like this is a big overreach, and you're now asking your owners, who are the reason, you know, without owners, there's no Vrbo. You're asking them to take on a financial hardship by blocking the calendar, because let's talk about this. It can take 6 months to a year to get a vacation rental sold. So you're telling me that these people are not allowed to make money on their property, on their investment, for however long this takes? What do you guys think about that?
I don't like that. You know, I always recommend to sellers too. I'm like, hey, take bookings, you know, during the process. You never know what's going to happen. The contract might fall through and you're out like, you know, a month worth of revenue. So until we, you know, due diligences are kind of like, you know, point of no return. So it's, I'm more comfortable telling them after due diligence, hey, look, it looks like we're going to close. You can go ahead and stop your bookings. But no, I mean, I don't think that's, you know, that's 6 months to a year's worth of revenue out the window if you do that.
So this is something that we've kind of battled forever in the Smokies, but it's usually just been with property management companies. It's their rule. They have had this, a similar rule to this, where, you know, you have to take anywhere from 30 to 90 days worth of bookings after. And it's not even take bookings. They actually want you to sign a contract with them, you know, to use them for whatever the period is. And so, because part of what Vrbo said made it sound like that you could continue to accept bookings so long as the new owner was going to honor them, right? So what I usually tell people, what I usually tell buyers is when they're very concerned that they might be taking on, you know, some future bookings that may not cover their mortgage, is in our market, and I think in most of our markets, you know, you're not booked very far out. So usually if, like, historically, if a property management says you have to do 90 days, you know, whatever, we can usually, and this is how the Vrbo thing would be, we can usually negotiate it to say, okay, we'll do that, but only bookings that are already on the books at time of closing. And then, you know, so not necessarily having to, you know, give them the whole time or whatever. But so, for example, if you had some Vrbo bookings that you had to honor and they were lower than whatever, you know, whatever you were hoping to rent them for, it should be for a very small period of time. And realistically, it should be for a very few amount of bookings, you know, unless you're closing, you know, in at the end of May, there could be a good bit of summer bookings, but, you know, realistically, it shouldn't be that many. It shouldn't be maybe a month. You know, you might have to plan that a month or maybe 2 months, you might have to help cover your mortgage. But the way that I've explained it to buyers in the past is if you really, really want this property, then that hurdle is one of the hurdles we'll have to jump through. But, you know, it shouldn't mess up numbers for an extended period of time. It should just be for the first, you know, couple of months, maybe.
Or maybe a remedy to that situation is you scoot the closing date back so you're not closing until those bookings are done.
Yeah, we've done that too. Yep.
My biggest concern is the not being able to take bookings during the listing period, because in this market, like you said, things are sitting, you know, 6 months, 9 months, and that's revenue that, you know, these sellers can't capitalize on. Traditionally, what I've done when I have a listing is when we are under contract and we're through due diligence, that's when I tell them to block their calendar and stop taking new bookings, you know, because we're pretty much in the clear at that point.
That would be my recommendation too. I mean, hopefully the Vrbo powers that be are not listening to me, but I mean, you can't ask somebody to take no more bookings with no idea if they're going to get any interest. You know, it has a lot to do with how they've got it priced too. So if you get somebody who's ready to go and wants to sell the property for what it's worth, it'll go under contract quickly. But if you get one of these, well, let's wait and see. My neighbor 2 years ago got $1 million more than me. Let's list it at $800,000 higher than we should and see what happens. You know, that's going to be on the market a long time. And I mean, even if a lot of times, even now, like good properties that aren't terribly priced, maybe just a little bit overpriced, they will sit for a while too. So it's just, I don't think that it's reasonable to ask a seller to take on that kind of hardship by just not having any bookings whatsoever. So I would recommend waiting until you get through due diligence, not even the contract. I would say due diligence, because you never know if a buyer is serious or if they're going to terminate or if they're going to find something, or, you know, their dad comes in and says, oh, this house is falling down. I bought two houses in my life and you don't need to buy this. So you never know. I would wait till after due diligence too. And let's talk a little bit about how are they even going to police this? Because that seems like, I do love Vrbo. We get quite a bit. We've worked hard on our Vrbo and we get a good amount of bookings from there, but they're not the most organized. They're kind of clunky. I don't see them being able to police this very well. What do you guys think?
I mean, aside from creating some kind of like secondary task force that, you know, combs like the MLSs and stuff, I honestly don't think that it's going to be in it. They're not going to see it. If they might see it by chance and then reach out, but, you know, I don't think they're going to be able to do that.
I would think their game plan is probably, let's have this policy so that if and when there's an issue, we can say, well, we told you not to do that.
Yeah, you're probably right about that.
Yeah, maybe they're not going to like track you down, but if it comes to the end and, you know, a buyer is complaining to, or I'm sorry, a guest is complaining to Vrbo because their trip was canceled or whatever, they can hold the seller liable, charge them whatever, because they have this as a policy.
Gotcha. So yeah. So maybe it's not a preemptive check. It's a, okay, well now we have some kind of leverage and recourse if this does happen to come after you. Okay. That makes sense. Well, okay. So enough about that. Let's talk about as it stands now. I think we have a lot of people out there who are like, okay, maybe I want to list something. Maybe I want to sell something, trade around. What is the typical best way of doing that? So let's talk about some FAQs here. So first question, I think a lot of people will be like, oh, you know, I've got 100 five-star reviews and I will sell this, a potential buyer, my Airbnb and Vrbo account for $50,000. Cause you know, it's a business and we can value it like a business and a 10X multiple and all these things that they saw on the internet. How much of that can you actually do? and what is not doable?
Yeah, you can't do that.
Well, first, you can't, none of the platforms will allow you to, as a buyer, to take over someone's listing. So I don't see that there is a value on that, because you can't, and I would never recommend that anyway, but you know, it's not, if I was selling something that had 100 five-star reviews and you were buying it, you can't take over that account and, you know, get my reviews and just take my listing and take my business.
Fear not saturation. When you are the cream of the crop, you will rise to the top. Come learn from me, the best in the business, voted 19-time world's greatest landlord, Luke Cashflow Carl, at stsplus.com, where you will learn to be the best in your field and the world's greatest landlord. We are teaching all the best practices in the world of vacation rentals, and we would love for you to join today at stsplus.com.
This episode of The Short-Term Show is brought to you by The Short-Term Shop. 30-year fixed mortgages, tax benefits, and long-distance management training made easy are just a few of the perks of owning a short-term rental. The Short-Term Shop can help you buy and learn how to manage your property from anywhere in the world. Just go to theshorttermshop.com and click Get Connected. Again, that's theshorttermshop.com, and we are brokered by eXp. See y'all over there. Yep, can't be done. I've had a lot of people approach me and say, okay, well, we know that this house is worth $450,000 as a piece of real estate because that's what the comps say, but how much is the business? You think it's worth 800? You think it's worth a million because I've made $100,000 on it? And it's like, the real estate, it's worth what the real estate is worth, because you can't take over Airbnb listings. You can't sell them. It's still residential. These things are still looked at as residential real estate, not commercial. I would love if they were looked at as commercial, honestly, but they're not. So still residential. It's still worth the same amount as the exact same house next door that is not a rental at all, for a while anyway. So
yeah, the appraisal will determine the value, and they don't look at that, any of that.
Yeah, or the furnishings. If you have like $100,000 worth of furnishings in there, it's just still whatever the price of the real estate is.
All right, so let's talk about, what do you do with future bookings? Do you just list it and keep carrying on business as usual? How does that work?
That's what I do. I tell them to keep the bookings on the table until we get closer to closing. And, it's like we said before, it's different here, so.
That's what I would do if it was my own personal property. I would keep taking the bookings until we were through due diligence and, you know, under contract.
Yep. It's not over till it's over.
And in my experience as a seller, when I sell a property that has future bookings, I call the platforms. Usually most of my future bookings are with Airbnb. So that's the main one that I've dealt with. But I call them directly, explain that I've sold. They usually ask for me to email something from closing, whether it's my disclosure, Alta, whatever they ask for. I send it as proof of sale, and they will cancel the future bookings for me. No fee to anyone. I've actually heard also that with Vrbo, they will attempt to help the person when they cancel them, you know, find a different, you know, different accommodations through Vrbo. But I don't know if that's true. I've never had that encounter personally. But one thing I have heard recently from, I haven't had this experience myself, but I have heard that, you know, that Airbnb is charging sellers when they have to do that, some type of cancellation. And I don't know if that is true, but what I would assume is that maybe they're not explaining it properly, that I've sold this property, I no longer own it, these bookings need to go away. So, but typical procedure is the seller calls Airbnb or the platform, whoever, cancels the bookings. And then if the buyer wants the future bookings, or in the new case with VRBO where they're requiring that, as a realtor, we at that point, like you guys said earlier, we disconnect and we connect the buyer and seller. And the easiest, cleanest method when I have been a seller in that situation is I send a screenshot from the platform to the buyer with all of the guest information for contact, all of the fees that were charged so that they can charge them the same amount so that they know exactly what they were paying per night and for cleaning and all that. And then they reach out directly to the guest and get it booked. Now, recently, I've had a client who has gone through this as a buyer, and she was using Hospitable as her channel manager. And within Hospitable, and I'm sure the others as well, I just am saying that because, you know, it was, is what we were doing, but it was very easy for her to go in through Hospitable and actually set up, like, put in all of the rates that it needed to be and get it booked very, very easily. So anyway, but yeah, that's usually connect the buyer and seller and then have them send all of the guest info and then all of the pricing info. And then the buyer at that point reaches out to the guest, and the seller is disconnected. Once they've done that, the seller is totally disconnected.
Yep. I agree with that. There's you really don't run into too much craziness, except for every now and then you get sellers that just really insist that the buyer take on the bookings, or sometimes you get buyers that just really insist that they need the seller's bookings. But in which case, again, we're not property managers, we're not co-hosts, so we don't have access to bank accounts and Airbnb and Vrbo accounts. So we just hook everybody up that needs to be hooked up and step out of their way in that instance.
I'd like to give one caution. So I had a client one time who, you know, and again, we as realtors disconnect because we are not acting as any form of, you know, leasing assistant or attorney or any of that. So when a buyer decides when they want bookings or they have to take bookings, the buyer decides how they go about getting them. Now, the method that I just explained is my favorite, where everybody gets disconnected and then reconnected, and it's very clean. But I had a client once who actually wanted to, they didn't want to potentially lose the guest, because sometimes if a buyer really wants the bookings, if a seller has them canceled and then gives the buyer the contact information, and then the buyer reaches out to the guest could say, you know, no, I don't want to rebook, we're no longer coming, or we found a better place, or whatever. They could choose to not rebook. So this particular buyer client wanted to make sure that she didn't lose these bookings. So someone at Airbnb, I believe, actually advised her that she could be added to the seller's Airbnb account as a co-host to finish out just those bookings, and then have a new listing to where she was, had those dates blocked, and then was taking on new bookings on her personal singular listing, but was a co-host. That is an option, but I don't recommend that option, because when you're in there as a co-host, there's a lot of crossed wires, like bank accounts, for example. So the seller has to disconnect their bank account. You have to connect your bank account for, you know, so that can get messy. But just so that, you know, just so that our audience knows, if you call into the platform, they may or may not tell you that you could do that, that you could be added as a co-host to finish out those listings.
Interesting. Yeah. And that gets a little in the weeds. For me, if I'm buying, I don't want your bookings. If I'm selling, I don't want you to have my bookings. Let's just make a clean break. I don't want to be wrapped up with you. Just let's all close this deal and move on.
Yeah. And that is my general advice to my buyer clients as well. And so I'm giving a blanket recommendation to all of our buyer clients in any market. I know that it may sound or feel promising that you could already have a few thousand on the books or, you know, whatever. The best advice that we can give you is don't take them, because even like that promise of money, it does not make up for the fact that, and I can't explain why this is, but human nature, even if it is a very smooth transition process for that guest, you know, getting a 5-star review, is a feat anyway. And if a client or guest comes into their vacation already remotely annoyed about something, then it sets the tone for the vacation, right? So if they were already annoyed with anything to do with the rebooking process, not to mention the fact that when they are canceled, it takes some time for them to get their refund from that cancellation. So if they're going to rebook with the buyer, they have to be ready to pay all of that money again. And so it's not ideal for the guest, especially if the booking is soon. You know, if their turnaround time is very soon, which it usually always is, it's not an ideal situation for the guest. It is best to just sever totally.
And I've had a few where we had very soon bookings, like they were checking in the day after closing or things like that. And it was a short window and we didn't want to cancel the guest, where the previous owner agrees to manage those bookings and we negotiate that they will just pay the difference out. I don't like doing it that way. But oftentimes the owners in my area are very, I don't want to impact the guest experience, and they kind of dig in on that. So again, that's not my recommended way to do it, but that is a, you know, one thing that I've done in those situations.
A caution for both sellers and buyers on that is the tax implication. So if you, the seller, are taking that money in and then giving that money to the buyer, even if you're charging a little fee, which they usually want to do, which is why would a buyer ever agree to do that? But you're paying taxes on that income. And yes, you can show that you paid it out, but I am not an accountant and this is not accounting advice, but I have had an accountant tell me, like, definitely do not do that because you're going to be not showing income as a buyer where you need to be showing income, and you're going to be showing income as a seller where you don't want, you know, it's not actually your money. So it can get tricky with taxes. So don't do that either is my best recommendation.
Yeah, that makes sense. I hadn't thought about it from a tax perspective.
Yeah, I hadn't either. That's good advice.
Yeah. Just had that recently, actually, where, the seller really dug in. She dug in on us keeping the bookings and her managing them. And I was able to explain kindly but firmly that we were absolutely not going to do that. So you either want to sell the house or you don't, kind of thing. But we agreed that we would take the bookings and at the same rate, but we would not, we would not pay her to manage those bookings for us. And so she wants, so then we got it negotiated down to, we weren't going to pay her for it, but she was still going to, manage them, right? It was still going to happen through her platform and then she was going to pay us. And fortunately, after me explaining to her all of the reasons why, not her, but to the list agent to explain to her, she consulted with her CPA. I said enough, like, not scary, but enough daunting things to where the seller reached out to her CPA, and her CPA confirmed and said, you definitely don't want to take in income and handle it if it isn't your income. And then
yeah,
she
and that is something we see every now and then where sellers are like, look at this great property that I've got and all this great rental history, and tell the buyer that I'll even manage it for them for 15%. And it's like, guys, shut up. Like, just shut up. Just, you want to sell the property or you don't. Why do you want to sell the property but keep managing it? Like, clean break. Stop stepping over dollars to pick up pennies. They don't want you to manage it. Nobody in the world wants you to manage it. They either want to manage it themselves or find their own manager. So just that one triggers me.
And one more thing while I'm thinking about it, just because we just went through this, if it's in the final quarter of the year, 9 times out of 10, people who are closing are really, really trying to make sure that they cross all their T's for buying for bonus depreciation, which hopefully will be coming back. And then it will be even more people doing that, you know. So if you are in the final quarter, you have to make sure, or you and your agent have to make so sure that you are diligent. That so this particular, the one that I was just talking about, we were also closing at the end of the year. And so I kept explaining to her that if you want us to buy this property, my client has to fully be in charge because we're at the end of the year, you know, material participation hours. There is no room. Like if you're in the first half of the year, there's some room for you to make silly decisions you know, for you to do that. But at the end of the year, you have to be extra cautious. Because if my client would have done that, then all of her, she had her, you know, bookings to show that you were active and this, that, and the other. She would have had no leg to stand on to show that she had those bookings. They didn't happen. She would have gotten paid through Venmo and nothing would have happened on a platform to prove anything. So you got to be super careful with that too.
I agree. Anything else? So we're coming to the end of the show. Really good information here. Anything else that we didn't cover about listing and selling a property that's an active vacation rental? Anything we didn't cover that we feel like people might benefit from hearing?
How about furnishings? You know, if you're a seller, don't be silly about wanting to keep things. If you have grandma's quilt in there, get it out before you list it. Don't be silly about wanting to take down your Ring cameras. And you know, I had a seller once that said the Keurig does not convey.
It's like 30 bucks.
If my client, I love my client so much that did that transaction. Obviously, I'm not going to name them, but if they're listening, they made a shirt because we got so tickled. They made a shirt that says Keurig does not convey.
It's like mind the gap.
It's so funny. We got so tickled. You're giving us, you know, all, anyway, but if you're a seller, please don't trip over wanting to take things with you. If you're a buyer and you show up and a nightstand's missing, just know that that happens. Don't, it's probably not worth taking the seller to court over.
Oh my God, y'all. The one of the worst transactions of my life was in 2018. So a 5-bedroom property in the Smokies. And I think it was something like $450,000. So, I mean, over double, like just the price of it alone compared to what it is now. But my buyer was so hung up on, there were two pieces of art that were local. They weren't expensive. It's not like they had some crazy value, but they were a bunch of sticks glued together in a circle, two of them. And we got through the inspection and, you know, we got through the big things like, were there any leaks, the foundation, roof, all that's good. My buyer would not close unless he got those sticks that were glued together. And I was like, and the seller would not give them to him. I was like, listen, I'm happy to buy you some sticks glued together. I will get you the best sticks glued together that money can buy. If you just, because it was a great deal, so great. I'm like, but just decide, if you don't want the property, that's fine. We'll go find you one that works. But if it's truly the sticks, I'll get you some sticks, babe. I got you. And we did end up closing. The seller gave up the sticks. But y'all don't trip over that because it was like a really good deal, like really good. So if you're getting a really good deal, please don't get tripped up over the sticks glued together.
I think that needs to be a shirt too.
Buy you some sticks.
Don't get hung up on the sticks glued together. I'm gonna get you.
I had a deal almost fall apart over a 15-year-old refrigerator.
Oh my gosh! Well, actually, that same deal. To take it. That same deal. They wanted, the seller wanted to terminate because our bug, I think it was the pest inspector, the Ring camera caught him peeing in the backyard.
I've had one of those too.
And they were so offended by that. They wanted to terminate. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I didn't raise the bug guy.
We didn't make it that far, but they sure got a picture of him.
So anyway, all right, guys. Well, hopefully audience, y'all found that helpful in terms of what you need to know when you're listing a property that's an active vacation rental and getting that sold. If you have any questions on anything, maybe you want to list your vacation rental, you can email us at info@theshorttermshop.com and we're happy to help you do that. Guys, you want to all say goodbye before we sign off?
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, y'all. Thanks, y'all.